So you believe in the paranormal?
Yes. I believe.
What exactly do you believe in, Mr. Conroy?
The kind of things you don't.
Well, that is indeed quite the story.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm aware.
Why do you think it's this Mr. Thedabit, this man?
No, it's not a man.
No, of course not. Just a figure of speech, mind you. Again, why do you think this Mr. Thedapet, this individual you believe to be the devil, just let you go?
I don't know. I went down into that darkness to try and understand and to put an end to all of this. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I had to put an end to it somehow. What happened to my grandfather, what appeared to be happening to me as well, but I don't know why it let me go. I don't know why it didn't explain something, anything to me. I mean, what was the purpose for all of this? Why lead me to the ship and then just...
Mr. Conroy?
There was no rhyme nor reason when I looked into its eyes. There was no purpose other than enjoyment. It was enjoying itself.
But you went down there to confront it in some way.
Yes, to find answers.
And other than these horrific events, as you've described them, did you find such answers?
No. I found nothing. Just more questions. The ship just attacked, and then after a few hours of hell, it simply let me go.
The ship itself attacked? You mean you were lost and found yourself in a decrepit portion of the vessel? You mean wood and beams, possibly loose from age, had fallen on you? Bruises, scrapes, things like that?
No. The actual ship attacked.
Okay. This young woman, Abigail Marshall, she witnessed these events as well?
No. No, like I said, I went down there alone. I went down there alone. To protect her.
Right. But she's staying with you now, at your grandmother's house,
while I figure out a way to end this, to stop whatever it is that's haunting the Queen Mary, because that in itself is what haunted my grandfather, what had driven him to suicide. So yes. Yes.
But Mr. Conroy, you haven't experienced any of these, I don't know, hauntings, any paranormal activity since you've arrived back home. That's what you told me. So if it's haunting the Queen Mary, then how can it haunt you at home?
This isn't my home. I live in New York. I'm visiting here. I'm trying to...
I understand. You're trying to stop this darkness. It's all right here in my notes.
I'm not crazy. My grandfather wasn't crazy.
Calm down, Mr. Conroy. I'm just trying to better understand. Answer me this, Mr. Conroy. Why are you still trying to understand these mysteries, as you call them, to stop this darkness within the Queen Mary, if it appears you've been, well, released?
Just because I haven't experienced anything in a few days, maybe a week.
Weeks, Mr. Conroy. It's been weeks.
You know what I meant. Just because I haven't experienced anything since I got off that ship doesn't mean it's over. If it doesn't come back for me, it will just come back for somebody else. If this thing isn't stopped and destroyed, if it can't be stopped and destroyed, at least people can be warned. They need to be warned.
You mean like your grandfather tried to warn people?
I'm not like my grandfather.
No, I suppose not. So, Miss Marshall is your girlfriend?
Abigail is helping me with research. Yes, she's helping me find a way. Look, I've told you all of this already.
So now you believe in the hauntings of the Queen Mary. And when we first met, after the funeral, before you had left town, you believed your grandfather had been ill, and his stories were nothing more than fiction, delusions of a broken mind. And now you believe differently. Now you unequivocally know that ghosts exist. And do you have any proof of your so-called discovery? Mr. Conroy.
Oh, man. You don't believe me.
Mr. Conroy, I really am just like you, trying to unlock the mystery of what is going on within your mind.
And that, my poor, unfortunate listener, is when I stood apprehensively and then tore at my overshirt, ripping several buttons off in the process. A now torn flannel hiding the same secret that my grandfather did. The same nightmare. It was a tapestry of sin upon my canvas of flesh, for I too was branded by the devil. It was the same symbol I had seen in that faded photograph in what seemed like a lifetime ago. An intricate detail of carved flesh, claw, tooth, talon. Whatever inhuman tool it was had carved what could only be described as the torments of hell right there upon my flesh. The rings, the circles, the pit. It was all apparent. And right there, front and center, was my grandfather's visage. Forever screaming out in pain among the rest of the damned. Do you know what it whispered in my ear before it did this to me? Go ahead and give me the beast. You already have my aid. This is my story. I pray that it's not yours. Whispers in the Cries. Written and performed by Matthew Ewald. Produced by Star Chaser Productions.
The time will come.
The words slid into my consciousness like a hissing radiator.
When, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door. In your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome.
I looked at myself in the dirty mirror, looking at my reflection, hand on my forehead, fingers disappearing into sweat-slicked hair. Glistening from desperation, eyes like bullet holes staring back at me. Eyes that had seen too much. Veins pulsing in my temples, reddish-pink worms, the beats in rhythm with my heart. I had lost everything.
And say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself.
I turned to look at my profile. On the left side, I wanted to face the wall, not the window. The wall was empty, the window was life on the outside. Head dropping like an anvil, I watched my nostrils flare, each hand gripping the edge of the countertop, spattered with stains ignored for the better part of 3 days. Nothing. I felt a void, but for the pain that was so consuming that each tear that now fell seemed to etch scars into my cheeks.
Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart.
I look past the stains, dried water droplets, breakfast grease, at the reflections on the gray surface. My hands trembled, muscle and sinew taut from shoulder to wrist. Spilling into the sink just inches away, more than a half a dozen bottles with familiar prescription labels in white and yellow, antidepressants, pills of every color for schizophrenia. A color for every voice. From Zoloft to Celexia, amplified as apraxia, increases in dosage, little stragglers of pills, ones that were no longer effective, and the big green bottle of Excedrin migraine. Looking toward the wall again, at the window and the nighttime neon and the happiness of everyone else in this damnable city, my eyes fell onto the brightly polished gun. Military issue 1911 Colt 45. The magazine was out and one round upright and tall beside it. Both items polished proudly, catching the light that hung from the kitchen ceiling, a small room, really. Nothing more than the countertop, that dirty mirror, a sink and a refrigerator that had scratches on it, white on the yellowed surface. Layers. Knowing what that cold steel would soon taste. Was that the gun talking to me? Or the face in the mirror?
Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes.
A photograph was clipped to the mirror's edge, slipped into the frame at an angle, still. The corners were long ago dog-eared and cracked, discolored by age. Pictured was a handsome young man and a beautiful woman, smaller and younger. Did it really matter to describe them? I already knew. Had known for so long. We were sharing a kiss that would forever be felt upon my lips. An embrace that seemed a lifetime ago. An echo of love and loss.
Peel your own image from the mirror.
I studied myself in that mirror, putting the photograph out of my mind, my eyes going wide and alert, aware. Something was coming. Laughter from the darkness of the hall past my left shoulder. Then, children laughing. Pool of tentacles sliding over the cheap tile at the entrance to the room, a devil's grin in the darkness. Away from the counter, away from the window.
Sit.
The open bathroom door slammed shut, pill bottles bounced in the sink.
Feast on your life.
I smiled. Understanding completely as I lifted the Colt. Grillo's Gym, October 22nd, 2011, 2:15 p.m. Blood and sweat mingled on my temple. A solid hit just above my left eye from the larger man weaving and dodging in front of me. To not any bystander, it was a blur of dragon tattoos from one and the smooth yet brutal wounds of another who had clearly studied the martial arts. And because of it, I was able to keep a complete focus on my sparring partner. A few droplets of blood meant nothing to me. A small cut from my last tussle had reopened, big fucking deal. I knew there were spectators. The blonde with the gray sweatpants on the Stairmaster a dozen feet away being a good example, staring at my chiseled jaw, my piercing eyes. A small bump on my nose that could only be seen in profile. I had more concentration by pure willpower than any technique my larger opponent could garner from his own trained skills. See, outside of Grillo's, I might be seen with a slight swagger as I walked past the storefronts along Desmond Avenue, checking out the women sipping drinks outside of Slugger's, while their boyfriends watched the big screen high defs above the bar. I'd nod, often getting an acknowledgement. The girls never noticing that I looked much younger than my true years. Here was a different story altogether. In the ring, I was like a pilot aiming for the runway on the smallest runway in the southern U.S. Grillo allowed paying customers to bring in a guest once a month, so at times a group of four workout buddies became eight. Those who were not local nor familiar to the neighborhood or the setup of the well-lit place in general might question the veracity of a college-aged kid going toe-to-toe with a downright frightening-looking man with muscles of someone who had, well, done some serious time. But me? Oh, I like to pick my battles. I liked this battle. I squeezed my eyes shut to get the stream of blood to mingle in my eyebrow and leave my vision clear, fit, toned. This summer, I felt my own personal best when it came to peak physical perfection. But tonight, I was losing. Badly. I was doing my best, keeping it up. Overhead lights showing every little detail of my opponent's face, the gap between two of his lower teeth. I knew my own face looked worse, just one small cut, but the fatigue was there. But I was keeping up, giving it the good fight, landing a few punches in between, taking a couple of good hits. I kept at it, though. Kept on coming. Started to wear the other guy down. Grillo's gym wasn't upscale. Sunlight streamed through yellowed blinds, stained by cigarette smoke and the decades before the new ordinances. But it also wasn't a rundown pit for guys on their way out, trying for one last dream comeback that would never happen. See, Jimmy Grillo wasn't what you'd call a real estate mogul, but he had seen the writing on those nicotine-stained walls a half dozen years ago. Buildings being torn down up the main stem, condos filling the vacant lots. The gym was no longer exclusive for training boxers, with floors filled with saliva from discarded mouthguards. His family had owned the building since the 1950s, and now he was the only Grillo left. And the building, while indiscreet, was two stories high and was a corner lot. And so the building effectively had two addresses. 39 South Wallace, which had the neon sign with the boxing gloves bip-bapping, and down a more darkened street was his joint, the way it had been for decades. But he had torn out part of the ground floor, hung up some motivational posters, and voila! 115 East Desmond was now the entrance to New Decade Fitness. People bought into titles. And so one wall was lined with young women in their tight bodies all the way to the old gals trying to drop the pounds and cellulite before their 40th class reunion. Young and old doesn't matter. And the second floor was a dream for those into vanity, not into trying to stay trim. Grillo had taken out a loan and put in a few treadmills and moved the existing weight benches around. Also, men like Dragon Biceps could grunt in the window. The sports bar with its bored women directly across the street. Grillo had paid that initial loan off within a year. Grillo was like a real estate mogul in one way. He knew assets when he saw them, and fitness was an asset. But he prided himself in not having an entire wall lined with the bright colors of vending machines hawking protein drinks, so-called vitamin-enriched water, and the newest fad, muscle milk. Its white bottle with the logo of the local sports team set to optimum visibility. He did sell Gatorade, though. The original and the orange flavored, because women seemed to like it more. And he still sold the 16-ounce bottles a little over cost. It was a place where you worked hard and played hard, and, yes, checked out the parade of flesh, but not be encumbered by the sight of personal trainers that were built like swamp monsters. Male and female. As I started into an arc that would hopefully land a solid hit on Dragon Tattoo's face for the first time in 2 minutes, I saw Grillo come out of his office, a small rectangle of red brick, big brawl posters visible through a spotless window, Sonny Liston, Cassius Clay. "Yo, Randy!" The boxing club connected, brief exultation at the expulsion of air from my opponent's mouth. "Randy!" Louder. Grillo moving forward like a steam shovel. "Hey, Jimmy." Fists up, a truce. No dirty fighting. "Telephone." "Can't you see I'm a little busy here, Jimmy?" You see, Grillo usually just took messages. But now he started to make his signature stance. "Randy." "Come on, man. Really?" Gloves in the air. Not a truce. Now an exasperation. I leaned into the other guy before turning away toward Grillo. "I'll have you down on that mat in a minute." "Phone call for you, pal. Some guy calling from back home." "And what?" I dropped my fist back down, nodded, and then the pummeling started anew. 2 seconds later, I'm plowed by a nasty right hook. Stumbled back against the ropes. Grillo had been moving with determination the whole time. His white-knuckled hands scarred going back to when I was in grade school, or balding fists. He dragged his substantial girth toward me, laid a meaty hand on my shoulder, slick with sweat. "You can take it in my office. It's family, kid." I didn't even offer him a look of indifference. "Randy." Grillo had known me a long time. He hated to have to just spit this out on his own. "I'm sorry." He tightened his grip on his young protege's shoulder. My shoulder. Pulling me away into my corner hard. "Your grandpa passed away, kid." I turned and looked at him hard. And then I shrugged. Take a message. Then I turned. And the match resumed. Before Grillo had a chance to shut the door to his office, I charged in and scored a KO for the first time in over a year. For the first time in a long time, I finally felt.
5, 6, 7, 8.
You okay? Alive.